detail with the Department of Agriculture's 10-10 plan. So the assessment of the subcommittee was that we are doing more than we've ever done for clean air and clean water in the state of Oregon, and notwithstanding the fact that we didn't fully fund the governor's recommendation, we did get awfully close with the $1.17 million.
And so, just to follow up on that, what is the, you said you 75 of these positions were due to the contracting of the emissions quality. How about the rest of those positions? What were they attributed to? The difference between 75 and 112.
The difference is, actually, we kept the 75 positions as contract staff in the emissions testing program because it's our belief that the reformulation of gasoline may eliminate the need for emissions testing altogether in Portland. That's probably within 3 to 5 years. We added a number of additional positions in other programs, but we did actually make some efficiency cuts in areas throughout the different sectors and sets of employees in the department. So there were some real positions that were not approved, but overall, as I said, 1.7% below the governor's recommended is still a pretty generous allocation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I just relative to the TMDL issue as it relates to the Oregon and Idaho border, there's an ongoing study. I wanted to know if the subcommittee had considered that issue and how they had addressed that issue. I understand that we've got an ongoing study right now relative to the waters in the canyons between Idaho and Oregon. And the Idaho is funding their portion of the study and proceeding with it. Are we participating, or are we going to do ours jointly, or are we going to do a separate study 3 years later to meet the minimum requirements? Did the subcommittee address that particular issue?
Madam Co-Chairman, to the question from Representative Butler, we did in fact discuss the issue, and I believe that there is a budget note that deals with the issue, and I'll ask Mr. Rocco to detail the Idaho TMDL study that you're referring to.
It is indeed.
Mr. Rocco.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, there was discussion concerning that issue, and there was some indication from the department that an agreement had been reached with the Idaho Power to conduct that study using funding from Idaho Power.
And so it has been addressed that we are proceeding ahead of time with the study, and Idaho Power is assisting. Is that taken into consideration in the budget so that we will actually be about 2 or 3 years ahead on the TMDL study between Idaho and Oregon?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, there are no additional resources identified in this budget to take care of any difference in the planned timetable of TMDL development. So there's nothing in this budget that would require the department to speed up.
And no budget note to accommodate it?
Not at this time, no.
Did that answer your question, Mr. Butler?
I guess it falls short, Madam Co-Chair, of where I thought we would end up, because what it does is it ends up that the state of Idaho is about 3 years ahead on their federal requirement to do the TMDL study relative to the pools of water between Idaho and Oregon. And if we, I understand that there are some resources that may be available to us through the Idaho Power to assist us in that. If we don't have a line item to accommodate that, it leaves us under our federal contract relative to the TMDL coming back about 3 years later. And I just wondered if it had been, it seems like we'd be better off financially to go ahead and address it now, but I don't want to try and second guess the members of the committee.
Madam Chairman, when we addressed this issue, it was represented to the committee that there was an agreement by the Idaho Power to fully fund the TMDL process, and that we requested a copy of that signed agreement, and when we finally did have the full disclosure of that issue, there was no signed agreement. So the representation that was made to the subcommittee staff that Idaho Power had agreed to fully fund the TMDL study turned out to be absolutely a misrepresentation. And notwithstanding that, Idaho Power still expected their offer to fund half of the TMDL study. So that was an issue that was also discussed at length with the subcommittee. And Mr. Rocco, what was the disposition of that?
Mr. Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, the last that I was aware of was the indication that there was still discussions going on regarding the between Idaho Power and the department, and there was some confusion about whether the Idaho Power had decided to pay for the full amount or not. And if in later time the Idaho Power decides to provide certain amounts of resources, the agency could always go to the emergency board to resolve the issue.
And furthermore, Madam Chairman, to the questioner, there was some language that was modified in the enabling legislation that would allow that kind of a cost share, would not preclude those kinds of payments if they were to be made. So we did make, we did recognize the issue. We did the research to find out if there was an agreement in place that had been represented, which there was not. We consulted with the folks from Idaho Power. We actually put the hearing over a day to have the representatives from Idaho Power testify before the committee. And as a result, we made modifications to the base bill by conceptual amendments that would allow cost share should that ultimately be the decision later in this process. And the bill moves forward with the approval of the committee and the understanding by Idaho Power and the Department of Environmental Quality that that was yet ahead of them.
I see. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Senator Chow.
question to the carrier. About a week ago, I guess, so the governor was quoted in the newspaper saying that he had asked the, he may ask the EPA to step in to do certain regulations for the Department of Environmental Quality if we don't fund better the air and water operation. And as I understand it, a total of 14 clean air and clean water positions with that. Existing positions? Would you comment on that?
Madam Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to make a comment on that. I can't imagine any circumstance under which an elected public official in the state of Oregon would invite the regulatory agencies from the federal government to assume any part of the responsibility that Oregonians have for managing our affairs under the delegation of authority that we have from the EPA, the Department of Environmental Quality, under the Clean Water Act. It seems to be a rather clear abdication of our responsibility to have the governor even make this suggestion. And the fact that we are funding this budget to within 1.7% of the governor's request, and the fact that there's nearly $300 million being appropriated, and the fact that management authorities are moving positions resides clearly in the director of the department, I cannot imagine what justification it would be for inviting a federal agency to take over the management of the Clean Air and Clean Water Act division in the state of Oregon. So for me to try to speculate what might be in the governor's mind would be an exercise in futility.
Okay. I appreciate that comment, but I think that the governor clearly is concerned about the level of funding for this agency and the staff reductions, 14 staff reductions, as I understand it anyway, were made in clean air and clean water, and he realizes that we need to do a good job of operating this agency, and we can't do it unless we give them a decent budget. And so I believe the governor believes this is not a decent budget for this agency.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, to the comments of the good senator from Corvallis, 777 positions, over $296 million appropriated, and we have apparently overturned our ability to meet the federal Clean Air and Clean Water Act if we lack of an approval for 14 positions. I find the assertion to be beyond ludicrous. Thank you.
Are there further questions or comments?
I'm going to comment on this page 10 of the budget talks about adding a community solutions team, 4 new people to deal with that particular project. And in light of the Harry's comments about all the people I already have, I guess I'm not sure the rationale behind adding 4 more people to do something that ostensibly ACC should be doing already.
To the questioner, I agree the agency does have an obligation to solve problems rather than create red tape. What the Community Solutions Team is designed to do is to integrate decision-making in a seamless manner between 4 agencies that have land use or air, water, or natural resource implications and approval responsibilities for transportation issues or land use decision-making. And the funding of these positions was also an opportunity to make that work in the interagency mechanism. So the positions within the Department of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality were meant to complement the positions that were also created in the Department of Transportation, the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and others. This particular appropriation was about $89,000, and it came with a 10-to-1 match, so it creates about $890,000 to facilitate planning for elimination of problems that would arise in this agency as a result of trying to plan to remove obstacles for economic development in rural and distressed communities. So I think this is an example of further empowerment of this agency to solve problems.
Mm-hmm. That's your call.
That's perfect. Thank
you. Just $890,000 of all our money, whether it's federal or state, you know, to fund 4 positions, that seems kind of high. Was there any discussion in committee about if they were to get this money to do what they're supposed to be doing already, that perhaps some other general fund money that is in their budget would then be reallocated, perhaps for some of the air quality issues that were brought up earlier, or the wastewater quality issues, which are probably pretty important for us to stay in compliance?
Madam Chairman, to the questioner, that is exactly the point that we've been making throughout the discussions of these so-called threats. When the when this rather generous budget, the most generous budget that we passed out of our subcommittee, was brought forward, it was immediately vilified and attacked by the agency in a what I consider the disinformation campaign. And we simply pointed out in the hearing for the record that the agency had passed the authority administratively to move resources where they're needed. And this extraordinarily generous budget gives him all the options to move people where he needs them. So I appreciate the
thing.
Different question, if I may. With regard to page 6, I believe, we're talking about the TMDLs and actually page 5, 2 and package 201, the Willamette Basin Restoration Plan. So I understand that Willamette Basin project would not be going through OWEB or any of the normal agency channels, is that correct? Is that a different package I'm talking about?
Madam Co-Chair, to Representative Schrader, the Willamette portion for the Willamette Basin Restoration Plan is part of the Oregon plan. It's being put together through state agencies with the Willamette Basin Project, which is an initiative that we saw brought forward from the governor's office over the past about a year and a half. The agencies will be responsive, but the Willamette Initiative has the funding mechanism that is fully outside of state government. They have been chartered with an executive order, and they have the authority and the ability to raise federal dollars, and they're in the process of achieving a 501c3 status so that they can do that as a nonprofit organization. Nonetheless, there's still oversight responsibility vested in these in the legislature, and the state agencies, even though they have been ordered by the executive order to cooperate fully with the Willamette Basin Initiative, are still responsive and still responsible to the oversight authority. So the Willamette Basin Restoration Plan does have allocation of Measure 66 money insofar as that it helps implement the Oregon plan steelhead supplement in the Willamette Basin.
Okay. follow-up, Madam Chair? Appreciate the response there. A concern I had, I'm just unaware, but how is it that legislature does provide oversight for fund allocation? Is there any way that the chairman of the Natural Resource Committee can make sure that the fund allocation through the River Basin Council complements the work that's being done here at the state level so that we're all on the same page?
There are a couple of mechanisms. First of all, there's regular reporting quarterly. We request quarterly reporting from the Willamette Basin Restoration Organization. We've also certainly have oversight, direct oversight authority for any appropriations that are made to watershed councils and for water conservation districts within the Willamette Basin project area. We do not have any authority over private funds that might be raised, donated, or leveraged with those dollars from federal agencies or other partners interested in participating in the Willamette project, nor, as a matter of fact, do we have any of the oversight authority over those dollars that might come to any soil water conservation district or any watershed council that are derived from private sources, or outside of our state funding. So legislative oversight authority simply and only extends the dollars appropriated through this process. So any dollars that are appropriated through this process, we certainly do have. We coordinate with the Willamette Project with quarterly information meetings, and we are in relatively constant contact with the governor's office to increase the relative level of comfort at the legislative level with the oversight. We had a meeting last week with members of the FR2 committee, the co-chairs, and several other interested parties to increase the communication between the legislature and the WRI, the Willamette River Initiative. And we're yet working on mechanisms to increase that communication and assure that there is proper legislative oversight where the authority is vested. It's a work in progress.
I understand.
There
was some discussion, understand the committee, about the industry's fees with regard to waste management and that sort of arena. What was resolved in that? To fully fund the department or make sure we didn't put too much general fund in? How did that come out of that?
There were two amendments that were offered to the bill, House Bill 1519, one that was brought from the regulated community, one that was brought from the agency. And both were extensively aired. We had information from the director. We had opportunities for the director to present his amendments and to comment on the amendments that was brought from the regulated community. At the end of the discussion, the committee members were very, very comfortable and had bipartisan support for the amendment that was brought from the regulated community, which seemed far more responsive and far more reasonable, which in effect helped move forward a process of cleanup on a voluntary basis and help certify those cleanups and eliminate red tape and some problems that we've encountered in the agency's version, which tended to keep the regulated community in a regulated loop rather than encourage a cleanup and then contact and certification after cleanup is done. So we went with the regulated industry's amendment.
So everyone's okay with the amendments at this point in time. Governor's office.
The committee is fine with it. We have had no negative feedback from the governor's office on that, even though the DEQ agency have advocated for their amendments.
Sure. Last question, if I may, Madam Chair. Let's do with the 1010 process. There were a couple of small components for urban and rural 1010 process. I think that's a good program in general for agriculture in terms of living up to its share of the obligations. Were those funded in this? Or has it
they were. President Schrader, if I may directly respond through the chairman, the 1010 was discussed. We looked hard at proposals to increase 1010 funding, which would have moved the timetable forward. We looked at the timetable that we've established for completing the 1010 plans. We used the authority to work those things through, and actually the 1010 components were approved by the subcommittee.
Thank you.
And in response to that question, Mr. Rocker, do you have anything to add to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Shaver, I'd like to point out that the Senate Bill 1010 activities are under the Department of Agriculture, and they're not included in the Department of Agriculture's budget. Those are Department of Agriculture activities.
And they're in that budget, is that correct?
They were not included in the Department of Agriculture's budget, which has already been through.
They're in this one. No, getting a mixed read here. They're not in either budget at this point in time.
There was the Department of Environmental Quality conducts the PMGL process, which is similar to the 1010 plan, but the 1010 plans are the agriculture water quality management plans are funded through the Department of Ag. The department had two packages regarding urban pesticide use and additional staff for speeding up the 1010 planning in two regions of the state. Those taxes were not included in the Department of Ag budget. In the DEQ budget, there was a provision of additional resources from another $66 to fund the steelhead supplement position in the package you were referring to earlier, package 201, to continue the process of developing PMGLs in the Willamette and Coastal region.
And now you can see why we keep the staff post by to make those kinds of clarifications underneath it.
Further questions, Carrier or staff? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 5019?
Obviously.
Senator Metzger, Senator Cho, Representative Block.
I can make a comment, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Yeah. I appreciate the good work that the committee did. A lot of good things in here, and the reason I just want why I'm voting no, if that's okay. Rationale here is that as I went through my questions, like the community solutions teams, the smaller agencies, I can understand why they need additional personnel. I appreciate the fact that LCDC maybe needed a little bit of help there. I point out that housing, which is a very small agency, was able to absorb two of the positions in their own budget. That transportation gets none. Economic development gets none. So I really have trouble with DEQ getting some, given 777 people that they already have within their agency. I appreciate the work and the work in progress with the Willamette Basin Group. But in conversations, I'm not convinced there's sufficient oversight. I think it should all be one project. We'll all work together on this. The federal funds, we have no control over. The private funds, I think the good senator is absolutely correct. We don't have a handle on. I understand compromises have to be made, but just have to move forward. But I think it's important to get on the record here that we don't quite have that seamless Oregon plan that we originally envisioned, I think, last session. And perhaps we can address that in the future. Also a little bit of concern about 1010 process. I don't think that process is exactly the same as PMDLs. I think I'm an outcome-based person. I think that's what the Oregon Plan was all about, getting the right outcomes. And if you can get the right outcomes, there may be a variety of ways to do it through the Forest Practices Act, through PMDLs, through Senate Bill 1010 from a couple of sessions ago. And I'm a little concerned that as we move away from that, that it may be very difficult. We get into a more bureaucratic and regulatory nature, and we get back into the heavy hammer approach instead of the voluntary approach that the chairman of the committee is very interested in advocating very strongly for. So because of these and the fact that there are some serious questions in the air and wastewater quality, I'm going to end my work.
All right. House Bill 5019, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 5029, Department of Human Resources, Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 5029 is Department of Human Resources. The budget totaled $7.3 billion. This is a 14.6% increase over the 97-99 estimated expenditures at the time the budget was submitted, and 11.9% more than the estimates that include rebalance plans approved by the Emergency Board in November of 1998 and during this session in House Bill 5059. The general fund, which totals $2.2 billion, supports 30% of the agency's expenditure and increases over 16%. The Adult and Family Services Division budget is based upon the expectation that cash assistance caseloads will continue to decline, but at a more modest rate than in recent years. It includes funding for provider training and daycare for parents who work on weekends, during the night, or extended hours. The Senior and Disabled Services Division budget includes appropriations for Medicaid long-term care services and Oregon Project Independence that are above the $97.99 expenditure level. The budget contains necessary expenditure limitations to implement Medicaid upper limit payment plan that provides an additional $80 million through the state general fund, as well as funding for the new employment initiative for persons with disabilities. SDSC and the Vocational Rehabilitation Division will jointly manage this initiative. The budget for the state offices for children, services to children and families reflects continued growth in foster care and adoption assistance. Resources are added to meet federal adoption mandates. The office continues to phase in the system of care, which offers more individualized services to meet the needs of children and families it serves. The Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division budget includes funding for the Oregon Health and Mental Health Services. It adds staff to address licensing and certification issues at the Oregon State Hospital and community mental health facilities, and it continues plans to close the Fairview Training Center by July of 2000. The budget for the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs continues all current programs. It also adds a total of $10 million to enhance the drug and alcohol treatment and prevention efforts for high-risk youth and their families. The budget uses the general fund to offset the loss of fee revenue for communicable disease detection in the Health Division's Public Health Laboratory and provides special purpose appropriations to the Emergency Board for abstinence-only education and teen pregnancy prevention advertising. The budget for the Office of Medical Assistance Programs funds a 36% increase in medical services for elderly Medicare clients not covered by the Oregon Health Plan and maintains the Children's Health Insurance Program at its current level. Although some reductions were made, overall general fund support for the Oregon Health Plan, including mental health services, increases $144 million, 27% over the $97.99 spending level. The budget for the Director's Office, which provides support services for the DHR division, maintains all programs and continues to centralize services. Funding was added for completion of the year 2000 remediation project and improving computer desktop support for the division. Funding also was also added to plan for the replacement of aging Medicaid management information systems. Many difficult choices were made in arriving at this budget over the past 5 months. There were 41 public hearings and 12 work sessions. It does not fund all of the programs the subcommittee wanted to support. However, it addresses the most critical needs of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens. And I would just add, Madam Co-Chair and committee, that we have a long list of potential add-backs should there be any money to suddenly appear in the coffers. The subcommittee urges passage.
Thank you, Senator Speaker. Senator Fisher.
Before I forget, I want to declare a potential conflict of interest in being involved in the nursing home industry and national administration.
Are there any questions for Senator Speaker?
Okay. I just wanted to say that I think that Senator Cheeto was absolutely right when she said there are many difficult choices, and there are a lot of very important services maintained in this budget, and we had extensive testimony on each of these areas, and I think that there was a lot of thought on the part of both LFO staff and the chair and the co-chairs in making the decision about what could be funded and what could not be funded. As the co-chair indicated, there are some important things that we were unable to fund in this budget, and I would particularly call attention to the fact that there were some things in SDSC that we were not able to fund. We reduce the client employed provider services. We were not able to sustain the spousal pay that is paid for individuals who are caring for a very disabled or terminally ill partner. We were not able to provide the impairment pay that is paid for individuals whose condition worsens in the residential or adult foster care situations, and so that we need to pay those providers more. We're unable to do that. We were not able to increase Oregon Project Independence to keep up with the projected caseloads. I think that the SDSC area is particularly challenging because that population is increasing because people are living longer. And some of that is very good because our medical care is good, and we've learned a lot about how to sustain health in older age. But the reality is that we have more people in the over 85, very fragile area. And I am concerned about our long-term maintenance of our community services, in-home services, because Oregon has the lowest per capita nursing home placement in the nation, and this was possible because we've invested in a range of community services, and we've been able to keep people out of nursing homes. And so there is a long-term concern about really focusing on the continuation of our community services, keeping people out of nursing homes, which is, of course, additionally costly, and yet not expanding the cost of those services because we're serving so many people that the costs are out of sight. There are things I don't agree with in the budget. I was very regretful about some of the things, but on balance, I think that this agency and the divisions do a very good job, and in spite of the cuts that I don't personally agree with, I'm going to support this budget and vote for it.
Thank you, Representative Ross. Are there further questions for Senator Skisham? Further comments, Senator Bryan?
Just two clarifications on the proposed amendments today. For Section 7, it says on Subsection 1, funds shall not be used to meet the cost of burials except the persons in the care and custody of the Department of Human Resources. I was just curious, what are the burial costs that are incurred when they're in the custody of?
I think we'll have staff answer that. Madam Chair, I don't have the number, the dollar figure at hand right now.
Is it similar to the Social Security benefits that's given for burials?
I would imagine the agency may be able to respond to that, but I don't know.
And then the second, subsection 2, may not be used to pay for costs associated with the implementation of or services provided under ORS 127.897. I just didn't know what those sections were.
That's the deficit dignity.
That's the dignity. Okay, thank you.
Are there Senator Metzger?
Yeah, just a question of the carrier. Senator Kisha, have you received the letter from the governor regarding Section 7 of the proposed amendment, his intentions with the entire budget?
What I have received, Senator Metzger, is a copy of a letter that was written to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House.
That's what I'm referring to. Thank you, Senator Kisha. Madam Co-Chair, the governor has sent a letter to President Adams and Speaker Snodgrass. And unlike a lot of the letters that we have received from the governor this year about his concerns, this one is rather pointed, and that his intention, quote, to veto 5029 if the amendments which ban state-funded abortions and services under the Oregon Death with Dignity Act remain in the bill when it comes to my death, end quote. My own, and without debating the issue, Madam Co-Chair, I know everybody's anxious to get budgets through and out, knowing that the governor intends to veto this bill. It would seem to me wise that discussion be continued rather than moving the bill through when it is certain to be back in the process.
And Master, I would just say that the governor has vetoed a number of budgets without even letting us know in advance why he was vetoing them. So I think that we are continuing to move our budgets forward, and we'll continue to do so. And that there are discussions going on between the President and the Speaker, and we're going to continue to move budgets.
My point is simply that this one is pretty specific as to what the intent is and what the problem with the budget is.
Madam Chair, I think the subcommittee worked hard and did a pretty good job with the budget, so I'm not critical of the subcommittee at all. I am critical just of the fact that we don't have enough resources in this budget, and I think therefore it's an inadequate budget in a number of ways, and I think witness to the fact that there aren't enough resources in the budget is that long list of add-backs that's there that would be added back if there were more resources. I think we could have found more resources for all of our budgets, including education budgets and human resource budgets, if we've been willing to look for those resources. And I'm going to be a no vote because of that.
Thank you, Senator Schell. Are there further questions or comments on House Bill 5029?
I'm a member on the Human Resources Committee, and I feel that the committee has put in a lot of hard work in deliberating all these issues. I am concerned that we don't have enough resources to take care of some critical issues. We have a $38 million restoration list, and among which one I'm very concerned with is the developmentally disabled population. The providers were promised 25 cents per hour increase, and we were not able to fund the second 25 cents per hour increase. And their turnover rate is something like 100%. So this is a real concern. I know the committee has put in a lot of hard work and a lot of stressful decisions. I'm going to support the budget, but I sure hope that somehow we will be able to restore some of the critical needs.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Yeah, I think considering the occupation of the governor, he certainly is aware of the needs in these areas. A strong commitment on his part to start with, instead of coming up with some of the leverages and things that he tried to pull against with his different agencies against each other, didn't help matters any in the work on this budget. It made our work terribly hard, and I would like to give our co-chair some real credit for what she worked with and developed with this budget under some real trying circumstances, and for all the governor's letter writing ability, if you'd lend a little bit of his support over here on some of these issues from day one, it would have made a lot of difference.
Any questions or comments?
Madam
Chair.
Senator
Schell. I'd just like to say how much I appreciate the subcommittee's work. This is, I think, the most difficult area in state government by far, because you are dealing with, you know, people who have circumstances that are difficult for us all to see and not to try to help. And I think the subcommittee made the best of balancing the resources that they were given to work with and coming up with good ideas, and I think every member of the subcommittee deserves a medal for their work. And it is a almost 15% increase over 97-99, it is actually an increase over the governor's recommended budget as well. It's not everything we wanted, but it is a good budget, and I thank the Secretary for their work. Okay.
First of all, I'd like to say that there was a lot of talk at the beginning of the session that the Oregon Health Plan would really have to be suffering large cuts and reductions in growth anyway. And we were able to fund the family insurance, the FIOP program that helped poor individuals with their health premiums. And I'm pleased that we were able to do that. We were able also to fund adult dental. And I'm pleased that we didn't have to to eliminate that program. I would just like to say about the governor's letter, the governor himself is eliminating 10 lines of service in the Oregon Health Plan. Those 10 lines are worth $4.4 million worth of reductions in the general fund. Those plans would bring, or those that plan of his, those reductions, reduce the federal money to the state by $6.5 million for a total of about $11 million. The governor himself has reduced in services from the priority list. And I find it very interesting that his social policy would cause him to veto this bill when it would put at risk poor, elderly, disabled, developmentally disabled folks for a line, one service, essentially, that does not get federal funds that is worth $2.8 million. That's all we're losing, $2.8 million. And I just want the rest of the committee to know that the amendment that was offered mirrors the federal Pride Amendment that does allow for a woman to receive public funds in the case of her, in the case of the mother's life, or in the case of rape and incest. The amendment also does cover the cost, administrative cost, for the Death with Dignity Act, because we want to be able to continually watch and be accountable for that act. So I'm hoping that the governor will seriously reconsider what he would be doing to a large population of people by vetoing this budget. So I do urge that.
Thank you, Senator Kutub. Okay, are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 5029? Senator Metzger? Senator Trow? Any no votes? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 5029 is passed. Having received the required majority, it's passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We now move to House Bill 5061, Department of Higher Education, Representative Minnick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Let's try this one more time. House Bill 5061 funds the operating budget of the Department of Higher Education. It combines the funding previously passed in House Bills 5022, 5057, and 5060 into one bill. As with those earlier bills, House Bill 5061 provides the Oregon University System with almost $108 million above the current service level and reverses the decline in state support for higher education that occurred earlier this decade. The only change from the earlier bills is that $1.63 million for the Oregon-wide Area Network, or OWEN project, is transferred from the department to a special purpose emergency board appropriation. The department will have access to these funds if Senate Bill 22 revenues are insufficient to fund the OWEN budget. The bill will allow the Oregon University System to implement its new budget model, address needs for new engineering education initiatives, and address faculty recruitment issues. The bill will also keep the instruction fee frozen for Oregon undergraduate students for 2 more years. The bill includes $12.85 million for program expansions at the Agricultural Experiment Station, the Extension Service, and the Forest Research Laboratory. These programs funded in the budget are fundamental to the health of Oregon's agriculture and forestry sectors. This committee recommends approval of House Bill 5061.
Thank you, Representative Minnick. Are there questions for Representative Minnick on House Bill 5061? Hearing none, are there speakers?
Do we even have quorum at the moment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 5061? Are there any other no votes on the passage of House Bill 5061? Okay, hearing and seeing none, or no more, then
House Bill 5061 is, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will now move to Senate Bill 5549, relating to state financial administration. Senator Ferrioli.
Senate Bill 5549 is the appropriation bill for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, OWEB, which was established in Council 33. As a single agency designed to administer the Constitution, we dedicated a lot of the funds to Dallas protection of the Anna Watershed. OWEB was created by a council member of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board from 5 to 11 voting members, removing CWEB out of the Water Resources Department. Senate Bill 5549 directs the allocation of the projected $42.7 million available on the roof in the 1999-01 biennium, the salmon, wildlife, and watershed protection and restoration. 65% of the available funds are $23 million. Are required to be used for tackle expenses as defined in the House Bill 3225. The remaining 35%, or 56 million, are available for operations. And for research and subsidies, focused on the use of these operating funds on maintaining the activities of state and local entities already engaged in the Oregon Plan. The committee provided $2.8 million to maintain state police fish and game officers, $3.8 million for fish and wildlife biologists, and other Oregon Plan and Steelhead supplemented activities, $2.4 million for saltwater conservation districts through the Department of Agriculture, and $400,000 each for the Department of Agriculture for operational expenses related to aquatic and riparian wildlife heat control, and to the Department of Forestry, Environmental Quality for Oregon Plan and Steelhead supplemented activities. OWEB was provided with $2.3 million for operational expenses, including the establishment of 13 full-time positions. The establishment of OWEB as an independent state agency resulted in the addition of only one position more than found in the governor's recommended budget. OWEB was also allocated $2.4 million for transfer to local watershed councils and $400,000 to support an independent multidisciplinary scientific. The subsidiary provided $26.6 million to OWEB. The grants of the Watershed Improvement Grant Fund is directed to set aside $4 million of this amount for fish feeding activity through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mm-hmm. Remaining revenue for capital expenses is directed to state police, fish and game officer vehicles, and to the Department of Agriculture for aquatic riparian and wildlife habitat management control programs. The subsidy also provided OWEB with $1 lottery fund limitations for interest earnings and directed to approve the Restoration and Protection Research Fund established in House Bill 4224.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli.
I recommend passage of this.
We appreciate that.
Thank you
very much. Are there any questions for Senator Ferrioli on Senate Bill 5549? Okay, hearing and seeing none. Are there any no votes on the passage of Senate Bill 5549? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 5549 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Yes, the previous act.
We now go to Senate Bill 587, relating to building code inspectors, Representative Minnis.
That's exactly what you were doing.
Construction growth in the state has led to concerns of timely plan review and inspections of projects by local and state building agencies. Senate Bill 587 establishes time limits for local jurisdictions to conduct plan review, but allows flexibility for conditions that require more time. It also establishes a licensing program administered by the Department of Consumer and Business Services, Building Codes Division. Persons meeting certain requirements can become a license to perform third-party plan review and attend inspections. Controls are inserted to ensure that third-party providers comply with applicable codes and avoid conflicts of interest. Initially, the new program will be funded by a loan from the Consumer and Business Fund. These authorized by Senate Bill 587 will be used to reimburse the Consumer and Business Services Fund. The subcommittee approved an other fund expenditure limitation of $147,106. Two permanent positions, 1.25 FTE with phase-in, providing administration and operation support in 1999-01. The Education Subcommittee was unanimous in its approval of this measure and asked for votes.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for Representative? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on the passage of Senate Bill 587?
Senator Reed? No.
Pardon,
Senator? I don't like surcharges.
Okay. there any yes, no? Are there any other no votes? Okay. Senate Bill 587.
No, I'm a no vote, ma'am.
Oh, Schrader? Yes. Okay, Representative Schrader is also a no vote. Okay. Senate Bill 587, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We will now move to Senate Bill 634 relating to libraries.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you,
Madam Co-Chair. Lamar Alexander, the former U.S. Secretary of Education, said if a child gets to kindergarten never having held a book, there is probably nothing the education system can do for that child. We discussed it as we discussed education a lot in this building. Senate Bill 634, originally intended, did something broader, but due to budgetary constraints, we were unable to provide funding for all the activities contained within the bill. As a result, your subcommittee approved an amendment to the bill to simply appropriate $350,000 to the state library for the Ready to Read program. This is a statewide program that serves 130 local libraries throughout the state of Oregon and has a proven beneficial input on your children's learning. I'd ask for your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative Hatchett. Are there any questions for Representative Passbridge on Senate Bill 634? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 634? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 634 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to Senate Bill 782 relating to the Oregon Advanced Technology Center Program, also Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 782 provides a general fund appropriation to the Office of Community College Services for the Oregon Advanced Technology Center program. As originally drafted, it would have funded the technical project coordinators at 9 community colleges and provided $3 million for Oregon Advanced Technology Center in Southern Oregon. Because of budget constraints, your subcommittee amended the bill to fund the technical project coordinators and to provide $100,000 in general fund as seed money for the center in Southern Oregon. Seed money will be used to leverage additional private and public support. 14.8 acres of land have been donated from a private individual as well as the federal government, and local businesses have indicated their commitment to the center. It is estimated that when the center is up and fully running in Southern Oregon, it will generate up to $30 million in economic activity in the 6 counties that it will serve. Your subcommittee recommends approval of Senate Bill 782 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. Are there any questions for Representative Patrick?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm going to vote in support of this as I voted the other day in committee in support of it, but I think that Rogue and some of the other community colleges should understand that usually what is good for one is good for all, and I would certainly hope that in the future the Rogue doesn't try to come in and try to cross Savage Rapids Dam.
I think somewhat along the same lines. Was there discussion about why just these community colleges are getting extra funding and not others?
Representative Trader, there was discussion about that in the committee. As I said previously, the time is right for Rogue to do that, and that's why they came forward at this point in time. They had 14.8 acres donated from a private individual, which is a substantial investment, as well as a cooperative agreement and land designation with the Veterans Administration facility there in White City. They have a lot of private support as well, and seed money to leverage other foundation money and other projects to get this going. And in addition, the 6th County region has a substantial unemployment rate as well as some problems there, and this is a good place to do workers training and other items.
Just a comment. I mean, community colleges in my general area also have some very good local, relatively speaking, local initiatives that have some broad impact, and you know, we've got a lot of people that are not fully able to benefit from the Portland economic success, and so a little bit of concern is going to just one area, and I think as Senator Hannah pointed out, there are other areas that are also in need of this type of support to get leverage money going.
Thank you, Representative Thank you, Representative. Any further comments on Senate Bill 782? Hearing seeing none, there are any no votes on Senate Bill 782. Representative Schrader? Any no votes? Senate Bill 782, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senate Bill, Bill 941, relating to mental health. Senator Cheetah.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This bill appropriates $250,000 to Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division to expand services for medically fragile children and their families. The bill also establishes a $1.9 million appropriation to the Emergency Board. It is earmarked for a pilot project using atypical antipsychotic medications for mentally ill persons who are not eligible for Medicaid services. These medications are expensive. However, long-term savings are expected from reduced medical and criminal justice costs because the new medications are more effective. The Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division is to work with interested parties to develop a pilot program and request the Emergency Board funding by January 2000. It's expected that at least 300 persons could be served during the pilot project, depending upon when the program begins. The program will be evaluated for costs and benefits to give credible information to the program outcomes and projected savings. OHSU, I believe, will be involved in this study as well, and the Human Resource Subcommittee recommends your approval. I should also say, Madam Co-Chair, that the $250,000 for the medically fragile children and their families is not, for what they need, is not a very large amount, but it does add some more money to that line item, and hopefully in the future this can build to help these children and their families because of medical technology. These kids live, and they're on ventilators. It's a very narrow group of kids, but they live on ventilators and require 24-hour care. And so my hope is that in the future we will be able to add additional funds. But this is a good amount to be able to at least put it. So I do really care.
Thank you, Senator Tito. Are there any questions on Senate Bill 941? Christian Schick.
We just heard testimony, I guess I'm a little confused, we just heard testimony that in the DHR budget there are a list of add-backs of existing programs or programs that we'd like to augment, and this is a totally new program. Was there any discussion why this program would be funded instead of the other ones like, you know, spousal pay, OPI expansion, and private wage increases?
Are you referring to the pilot program?
I'm referring to this bill?
Yes, well, there's a pilot program in it, and the
children. All the issues here, the whole $2.15 million.
Actually, the $250,000 for medically fragile children was put into the bill. It was a $5.8 million separate bill that was funded totally in a different way by an investment through insurance. We didn't do that bill. If we moved it into this bill, so funding it totally differently. And that was one of the subcommittees. It was just one of the bills that came to our committee, and the subcommittee acted on it. And the other pilot program is a program that will help show us that the second generation antipsychotic medications do help with mentally ill persons. And during our hearings over the last 7 months, we heard from families who have these individuals, whose adult kids have these mental illnesses, and these medications, because they have many, many fewer side effects, work and help them to keep taking the medication. And so this pilot project will show us through the study, because it is a sampling of individuals that will be able to do this in the community programs, that it will save us money in the long term. There are programs, I mean, these go to the county programs that exist, so
while it's a pilot project and we are going to do a longitudinal study, I guess I don't understand what you're asking.
Sure. Let me follow up, if I may, Madam Gocha. With regard to the antipsychotic medications, is there anything now that precludes and is used currently by doctors and physicians? Why do we need the pilot?
Funding. These drugs are extremely expensive, unfortunately. There just have not been funds available in our program to use these drugs, even though they potentially can be of great benefit. I've spent a little, no expert on the subject, but I spent a little bit of time talking to people in my district who are part of a local group called MAMI, but they're the local affiliate of that, whose loved ones have schizophrenia, paranoia, these kinds of problems. And some of them are able to get some of these drugs because they can either their families can afford it or they end up under state programs because they are a risk to themselves or other people. But a lot of people can't get these services because there's a lack of funding. And this really does have the opportunity for the state of Oregon to reduce our costs in other areas, and that's what the study will tell us. A lot of these folks who have these problems end up in our mental hospitals, and it's kind of a revolving door in our mental hospitals, or they end up in our county jails, even incarcerated in our prison system, because a lot of them end up abusing drugs, abusing alcohol, and then they get themselves into some kind of crime because of those things. And so there really is an opportunity, and I would encourage you, if you haven't chance, spend some time with some of the people at your local area who have had an opportunity to get their loved ones on these drugs, and they really can have productive lives and have jobs, and be stable and not, spent some time with some of them that, prior to these drugs, they were in the mental hospital about every other month. And now they've been 3 years not in the mental hospital. So it just does have an opportunity to save the state of Oregon a great deal of money. And subsequently, did vote for this.
And I would say the other thing is that it allows for some improvement rather than maintenance, just maintaining what we are currently doing. And these are for people who are not eligible for Medicaid. And that, I guess that can mean those who can't afford these medications, and yet they are not covered by insurance or whatever. I think it's an excellent opportunity for us to really do this study, make these medications available, and I was moved by the testimony of those that have jobs. They've gone back to work because of this, but unless we're able to follow this through and prove that an investment in this area does bring about a saving, the status quo that we're needing. I know in the corrections department, they will spare no funds in using these kinds of second generation drugs because of the fact that they have low side effects and they do make the
people,
they balance them out and make them able to.
Can I ask a follow-up question there? I have no doubt that it's a good idea. So in other words, the pilot is just an expansion of our mental health appropriations, basically. Okay. And if I may, then the goal of the study is just to help show the drugs are effective. And I guess I'm kind of wondering where we're going with this. Is this I would assume that the drug companies have done some studies already to show that these are pretty effective, or they wouldn't be marketing them. And then, I guess if we're trying to expand mental health, we just put it into the mental health program. I'm not tracking what we're trying to accomplish, I guess.
Well, what we're trying to accomplish, actually, Representative Schrader, when drug companies do studies, often people don't believe them because the drug company did the study. And they're producing the product. And they just, so this will allow OHSU to participate in this longitudinal study to actually prove to this state that if we invest in these medications, we are going to save in the corrections budget, mental health budget, in our state hospitals, in every area. So that's really what it's about. The long and the short of it is that drug companies do have studies. I have read them, and I believe them. But there are people who don't believe them because they're the rich pharmaceutical companies who are producing these medications, and that's self-interest. In this case, I believe we really want to help these individuals. They need our help. We heard from their families. We heard from them. And it's almost miraculous what these drugs do. They are not like the old ones where they're grueling and because of the side effects, these people don't want to take the old drugs. These are totally opposite. And I think that we need to be able to prove that so that we can make the investment and not say we can't afford it. Because this will show us that it is an investment that saves us in the long run.
Wow, comments. And I appreciate the intent here. I'm just unconvinced we're getting to where we need to go. I mean, we're going to save money. I don't know how you're going to save money when the drugs are going to be very, very, very expensive. The idea is you're not going to have more visits. I think it's going to be very circumstantial and some kind of a subjective type of study. I'm into spending money, I think, equally. I think we're singling out a special group, albeit a very worthwhile group, but I kind of wonder why we're doing that, not funding some of our base mental health needs and stuff. There's been a number of other programs put forward. I'm having an increasing concern that what we're going to end up doing here is adding new programs. All of these are very worthwhile, and yet not doing a thorough job with case roll-ups in existing programs. You should get rid of some of the existing programs and make some tough decisions. But I'm a little surprised that we're approaching it this way. These drugs are available, as Kendra pointed out. They've already had the studies done. They're effective. Just a function of going out and putting the dollars together to use them. If we're going to expand, the caseload, I worry about roll-up costs. This is this particular project's for 300 individuals. The other project treats 3 to 5 individuals. And I think we have to be, we're paid here to make some decisions about these. And I just wonder about why we're going down this route and leaving other holes in the human resource budget. I guess I'm just having trouble grasping the concept.
I would like to make a comment about the medically fragile. There are 50 families on the wait list. And that would take about $6 million to meet the needs of those families. We cannot do that. I guess this is our way of making a statement because those families have been consistently left out of the governor's budget. And this is our way of making a statement that we hope that there will be funding for this. And yes, there would be a roll-up cost. But these are extremely tragic situations, and the families, 15 of those families, my understanding, are going to have to give up their parental rights in order to get financial help to take care of their children. And that's a very sad situation. Other states don't allow this to happen. And while it's not everything those people would have wanted, I feel we need to make a statement and that's how you do that here. Okay. Is there more comments on Senate Bill 941? Are there no votes on Senate Bill 941? First thing, Rich. No votes? Senate Bill 941, having received your required majority, is passed to the floor with the passed recommendation. And we move now to House Bill 2002 relating to crime. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2002 came to the Ways and Means Committee from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, where it passed with unanimous vote. House Bill 2002 classifies DUII as a Class D felony when a person has been convicted of a DUI three or more times in the 10 years previous to the current offense. It also classifies most instances of felony driving while suspended or revoked as a Class A misdemeanor. The Public Safety Subcommittee adopted amendments approved by both sponsors of the bill, which significantly reduced the fiscal impact. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill and amended it to reduce approximately $3.6 million from the Department of Corrections Community Corrections grant funding and appropriated approximately $1.1 million to the Emergency Board for the allocation to the Department of Corrections if necessary for population management issues. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. Are there questions from Senator Bryant?
Just one, and I think this is a technicality, but Section 9 leaves in the emergency clause. Section 8 takes it out, in most sections, because it's effective December 31st. In speaking to the people from the Department of Motor Vehicles, with the emergency clause in, they'll be unable to change the computer and software in time to reflect the change in the law because it becomes immediate upon the governor's signature. And so there'll be people then that'll be charged with a crime that probably wasn't intended to do. Would it be, Rob, do you have any objection if the emergency clause in Section 9 were deleted? Because that in that way it becomes effective 90 days after we adjourn, and that would give them the opportunity to correct their software. They estimate it will take them on their computers about 150 hours to come.
It seems like something that needs to be done technically, so I don't. I trust the recommendations of Senator Bryant. Been doing this a few years, so.
Madam Chair, I don't know if that would change the fiscal impact. Larry's shaking his head. So can I ask what that change would be?
the primary form of saving initially was in the immediate impact of the driving while suspended. There's about 900 offenders, and it dropped 3 months out of order. Otherwise, now 24 months impact. In speaking to your concern, I just want to comment, if I could, that the law would go into effect immediately in its current form. Police officers would be so advised, and they would cite accordingly. The only reason that somebody would be treated as a felony for driving while suspended would be if it involved the homicide or the vehicular assault. So if the police were informed, I don't think the increased consequence would occur if they knew that driving while suspended was upon effective date of this became a Class A misdemeanor. I'm not sure what it would be a records concern, whether when you went to the record, would you see proper classification. And
that's
I understand that DMV would probably have about a 60-day period where it may not show the proper classification for a driving while suspended offense.
And so they would be charged inaccurately.
For about a 60-day period, I guess they would. But the officer, citing officer, would be the one who would determine whether it was a class either a felony or a misdemeanor.
Right. And so here's the risk. Will every police officer in the state understand the law and cite correctly, or will they rely on the records that come up from the Department of Vehicle? And many officers probably would, but some wouldn't. So if we wanted to be safe, and it's about 80 a month, we would delete the emergency clause or give them 60 days or something in which to make that record correction on their software.
Mm-hmm. Question for Ms. Nicklander. And how, if we were to delete the emergency clause, how would that affect the fiscal? It's just a ballpark. No.
Thank you.
Chair Lewis, committee members, there's already some leeway built into the fiscal. I would expect it to be significant.
Pardon? I didn't.
There's already some leeway built into the fiscal impact statement. I wouldn't expect it to be significant if it was 30 to 60 days or less.
Well, we do have a, except for technical amendments, which I'm not sure I consider this technical, because it might have some impact on the fiscal. And we don't consider conceptual amendments in
I would move we return this to the subcommittee. The subcommittee will meet tomorrow, and they can return it. We're going to be meeting every day this week, or fairly regularly. And so it seems to me that we return it to the committee. They can look at other effects of this and make sure that we do it in a way that we're not just right here in the afternoon. It's quarter of six. We might not be terribly active about what we did. So I would move that.
Thank you. Representative Ross moved that House Bill 2002 be re-referred to the Subcommittee on Public Safety. Are there any comments on the motion? Hearing and seeing none, are there any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so moved. Okay. That brings up House Bill 2354 related to a special election. Senator Yee.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2354 sets a statewide special election for November 2nd, 1999. Referrals of the Legislative Assembly will appear on that ballot, and the bill creates the process for that to happen. At this time, six measures have been referred to the voters, and another seven may reach the ballot. When A. N. Groh's House Bill 2354 was sent to the Ways and Means Committee, it applied to only one measure. The cost for conducting the election and preparing and distributing the voter's pamphlets were estimated by Secretary of State on that basis and were originally set at $1.2 million. With the addition of as many as 12 more referrals, the costs now are expected to be as high as $1.7 million. The Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee established a $1.4 million special purpose allocation in the Emergency Board for the Secretary of State's special election expenses. The Secretary's Emergency Board request will be for actual costs. If they are less than $1.4 million, the amount not used will remain available to the Emergency Board for other purposes. Your subcommittee recommends your approval of House Bill 2354 as amended.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Are there any questions for Senator Yee on House Bill 2354? Representative Schrader.
Yeah, is there any particular reason we need to have a special election to do this?
Representative Schrader, all of the, I believe, copies of crime victims bills have been passed out specifying the November 1999 election. So the rewrite of measures, the crime victims measures, that 18 cases. Representative Schrader?
I guess I'm asking why that is.
Well, I think those were substantive committees that made that decision, not us. We only requested the funding.
Okay.
Are there questions or comments on House Bill 2354?
I'm sure I'd like to be a no.
So it's a no. Okay. Are there any other no votes on House Bill 2354? Representative Schrader and Representative Ross. House Bill 2354, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 2394, relating to crime, Representative Weston.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 2394 came to Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law. House Bill 2394 increases the penalties for persons who commit certain vehicular homicides or assaults while attempting to lewd a public safety officer or while driving under the influence. Public Safety Subcommittee adopted amendments provided by the chair of the referring committee and approved by the sponsor of the bill that significantly reduced the fiscal impact. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the fiscal impact of the bill and amended it to appropriate $75,284 to the emergency board for allocation to the Department of Corrections if necessary for population management issues. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Westland. Are there any questions for Representative Westland on House Bill 2394?
Chair.
Senator Bryant.
Representative Westland, do you have any objection if the Senate Judiciary takes a look at this? quickly.
Define quickly, Senator.
Within half an hour.
Well, I'll tell you, I would certainly defer to my august co-chair on this, but if you can look at this, put your stamp of approval on it by the time we adjourn this evening, come back with an aye vote. I don't see any reason for delay.
I didn't mean half an hour right now.
I did.
Senator Bryant, any further questions or comments?
No.
No. Okay. Are there any no votes on the House Bill 2394? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2394 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. House Bill 6431, relating to Community Right to Know Program, Senator Ferrioli. Senator Ferrioli.
House Bill 2431, relating to the Community Right to Know Program. Colleagues, this bill creates Community Right to Know Texas Committee to be staffed by the state fire marshal. Committee is to develop a plan for the creation of a central access instrument on the Internet with hazardous substance information. The National Research and Subcommittee approves a limited duration position and $108,019 of other fund expenditure limitations to carry out these duties. Fire Marshal will also transfer $139,455 from the Community Right to Know Fund in the Department of Environmental Quality to fund a limited duration position in the Department needs to support the work of the Technical Committee. House Bill 2431 establishes requirements that a new local right to know program must follow. Establish requirements that new programs must follow. These guidelines include allowable programs, fee structure, maximum programs, and public process assurance. Programs established before January 1st, 1999 would not be subject to these provisions until July 1st, 2003. The bill also directs the Department of Environmental Quality to establish a policy group charged with reporting on options for enhancing statewide toxic substance reporting through data collection. The subcommittee approved a $149,170 general fund appropriation to create a limited duration toxic substance coordinator position to staff the policy group. And the Research and Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Are there any questions for Senator Ferrioli on House Bill 2431? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 2431? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2431 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 2718 relating to retired dentists, Senator Cusack.
Directs the Health Division to establish a program to purchase and maintain liability insurance for retired dentists who provide dental services to low-income patients based on the ability to pay through non-profit corporations. Dentists are not to receive compensation, but will be reimbursed for lab fees, testing services, and other out-of-pocket costs. Volunteer dentists who provide emergency care are covered from liability under the Oregon Good Samaritan Law. Recently, volunteer dentists have begun providing preventive and restorative dental care, which has raised concerns about liability. Proponents of the bill estimate the cost of the insurance to be $25,000. Your subcommittee believes that $25,000 for liability insurance is a cost-effective way to allow low-income residents
access to quality dental service. Your subcommittee also believes that the risk management division of the Department of Administrative Services is the more logical agency to purchase and administer the liability insurance. The Department of Administrative Services has agreed to this. Your subcommittee has drafted an amendment to the bill to make the Department of Administrative Services the state agency responsible for the program and provide funding with the $25,000 general fund appropriation. Your subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 2718. Is there
Senator Fisher?
Yes, Madam Chair, was there no staff summary for this, or did we just not get it?
I have one.
Okay.
I got one.
We didn't get the
summary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Representative Mazur.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the carrier. Is there a reason why they couldn't be insured through the state pool, liability pool?
Does staff have an answer for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Messerly, if I understand your question correctly, could they not be covered under the state's insurance? Is that correct? Madam Chair, Representative Messerly, I believe it's not possible because these people aren't employed or doing work on behalf of the state. They would be doing work on behalf of nonprofit organizations on a volunteer basis, and I think that would require a separate statute to cover them.
Well, that's not a totally stupid question. The reason I ask that is that with the watershed associations, we have covered them through the state pool, and they are also, there must be some connection there where they are allowed to be covered through the state insurance pool.
Hmm. No, Chairman, Representative Messerly, I wasn't aware.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to express my gratitude for people like Northwest Medical Teams to come forward and provide these services. I think that draws us closer together as a community. It recognizes, number one, the skills that these people have. They're not rejects, they're not outcasts just because they may be retired. And number two, they provide a very, very much needed service at substantial savings for the people of the state of Oregon. There's probably millions of dollars worth of services provided with six substantially full-time dental units out there that are provided in the biennium at a cost of $25,000 for the insurance. I just express my appreciation for people that will make this a better community by dedicating and donating that kind of time and energy and effort. It really confirms my feeling that there is goodness in mankind.
Thank you, Representative
Miller. Senator Hannah. Madam Co-Chair, is a response for Representative Messerly. The reason the watershed boards are representing, in essence, the state of Oregon, whereas these are representing people such as Northwest Medical Teams, and they're not associated with the state. And that's the reason, if it was the state of Oregon, utilized and retired dentists, they could be covered.
Very good. Okay, are there any no votes on House Bill 2718? Hearing and seeing none, House Bill 2718 is passed to the floor with due pass recommendation. Mm-hmm. That brings us to House Bill 2901 related to taxation. Senator Peterson.
House Bill 2901-8 extends the eligibility for senior property tax deferral programs to disabled homeowners who qualify for Social Security disability benefits. The measure also increases the maximum household annual income required to qualify for the senior deferral program from $24,500 to $27,500. Federally adjusted taxpayer gross income limit increases from $29,000 to $32,000. The bill links these income limits to annual changes in the Consumer Price Index. The Dash 7 amendment delays the implementation date of the bill to July 1, 2001, thereby eliminating the revenue impact for the 9901 biennium. The Legislative Revenue Office expects that 3,650 new households will participate in the tax deferral program with a reduction of general fund revenue for the 2001-2003 biennium of $10.7 million. The fiscal impact of the bill within the Department of Revenue is expected to be $226,145,000 and $196,022 for the 9901 and 0103 biennium. This impact assumes that the Department of Revenue will need to modify its computer programs to facilitate the changes in Hospital 2901. The subcommittee urges passage.
Thank you, Senator Keita. Any questions for Senator Keita? Sorry, Madam Chair.
Well, if the measure doesn't take effect until year 2001, why is there a fiscal impact in 99-01?
Mr. Britton will answer that question for me.
Co-Chair and Senator Yee, the answer to that is that the Department of Revenue wants to prepare for the implementation date for this bill, modifying its computer programs now, rather than waiting to modify them once the bill actually takes place. So they want to get the work done during this biennium, upcoming biennium, so that they'll be prepared when the bill actually goes into effect.
I would just add, if I recall, we had a related budget in our committee dealing with this program, and there was a substantial reserve fund that we used in the general fund, really. We allocated that to the general fund. The governor had begun that process, and we did part of it. And that reserve fund could have funded that, and we could have implemented it this year, but we thought this bill wasn't going to pass when we dealt with that particular issue, and so I guess it makes sense to delay it now since we was about $14 million,
I think it was $10 million, and then there was some more. I think it was $7 million, so a total of $17 million.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Okay, are there any further comments on House Bill 2901?
I'm sorry. As I understand, this is be a $10 million hit in the. There's a good senator in Oregon that I like to listen to, and he keeps talking about how we're not allowed to obligate future legislatures. This would seem to be obligating them with kind of an impact that we don't have any control over this time, and they'll have no control over next time. Is there, you know, a problem with us doing that? Are we changing our philosophy a little bit here? Because this is an obligation we're putting on, seems to me, the next legislature. They don't fund $10 million.
Are you asking me?
No. Oh. I'm just asking you.
I'm sure. Could I comment on that?
I
think that this bill, as originally intended, would have been pretty much fully funded by the reserve that this particular tax program has been building up. It's been building a reserve. It probably will continue to do that. And I don't know whether
whether this program can tap into that reserve or not. But I don't think it will be as expensive as it appears to be here in terms of absolutely new dollars.
Another question, then? See, that the fiscal seems to be ongoing, slightly less, but ongoing, and as I understood the presenter, it's basically just to change a computer program a little bit and change some limits. I guess I'm curious as to why we have an ongoing fiscal.
Administrator, I have been constantly amazed at the Department of Revenue cost on many of these bills. I don't know. Maybe our staff has a better answer than that.
I don't have a better answer than that. I'm looking at the last sentence of the fiscal impact statement. Expenditures include revisions of forms, applications, and letters, and an increased number of documents mailed. My sense of this was that once the tax law change had been made and the deferral program had been modified, that there would be some initial upfront costs along the lines that I mentioned a moment ago, and they must continue. But beyond that, I'm not certain. I just think there will be some cleanup work once the bill is actually implemented, the first part of the 0103 biennium.
Just a comment. I'll be voting for it. I think the intent is very good. And I agree with the co-chair that Department of Revenue, I think DMV, there's others that are creative in having these ongoing huge costs to make a simple change in a computer program that I just have difficulty understanding, and hope that in the future that next legislature will look at that aspect of things anyway and hopefully be able to make a change.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I concur with exactly what Senator Crow is indicating, and that is that originally, the senior program was funded from the general fund, and it has been accumulating excess cash on a regular biennial basis, and that's what we're doing is in the process now of collecting it out. If we look at the budget dynamically relative to the $10.7 million, it may be that there will be sufficient collections that would be muted somewhat. And as to encumbering future legislators or legislatures, certainly the next legislature could say, no, we don't think we want to do this, there's enough money, and they can basically stop at that point.
Further comments on House Bill 2901?
I'm not
voting. Are there any no votes on House Bill 2901? We have a no vote on House Bill 2901. Okay. I think I should perhaps declare a potential conflict of interest. I have three nephews who are developmentally disabled, and they may acquire property from their parents and be eligible for this program at some
point. Next bill up is House Bill 3049 relating to firearms. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tim. House Bill 3049 came to the Joint Ways and Means Committee from the House Judiciary Criminal Law Committee, prohibits cities or counties from suing firearm manufacturers or dealers for damages resulting from the lawful design, manufacture, marketing, or sale of the firearm. The bill reserves such right exclusively to the state, but prohibits the Attorney General from intervening in any existing suits against firearms manufacturers. Amendments approved by a subcommittee removed a provision in the A and Gross version that required a study. As a result, there is no fiscal impact of this bill. The subcommittee recommends your approval.
Thank you, Co-Chair Lewis. Are there any comments or questions in regards to House Bill 3049? Are there any no votes?
I'll provide a courtesy vote. I'm reserving now a vote on the floor.
Okay. House Bill 3049 is passed.
Thank you, Co-Chair Tim. House Bill 3114, relating to required courses of instruction, Representative Ross.
Oregon tissue is built through the hard work of many different cultures. They work side by side to develop a magnificent state. House Bill 3114 provides our children the opportunity to learn and celebrate Oregon's history that was created by these diverse cultures. Oregon study includes a balanced presentation of the history, geography, economics, and civics specific to Oregon. In addition, there will be instruction about various levels of government as well as the electoral and legislative process. The Department of Education, in cooperation with the Oregon Historical Society, will develop the standards to define the academic context. This process can be incorporated in the normal review process of the department standards. The support materials for the program will provide a balanced presentation of the relevant contributions made to society by the many cultures of Oregon. The Oregon Historical Society is committed to support the program through their fundraising efforts. The Human Resources Subcommittee urges support of House Bill 3114.
Thank you, Representative Groth. Are there any questions for Representative Groth on House Bill 3114? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3114? Senator Hammond is a no voter. Then I need a no vote, Senator Yee. House Bill 3114, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That brings us to House Bill 3128, relating to emotionally disturbed children. Senator Cusa.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This bill appropriates $200,000 general fund for the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division to expand services for seriously emotionally disturbed children and their families. Funds are directed to an existing treatment program in Douglas County for fiscal year 2001. This will provide services for up to 15 more children aged 5 to 12, and the Human Resource Subcommittee recommends your approval.
Thank you, Senator Cusub. Are there any questions for Senator Cusub on House Bill 3128?
Just one, Madam Chair. How is Douglas County selected? Do they have the greatest need as a geographical area?
They had a bill which they lobbied for, Senator Bryant.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, do I have to declare potential conflict of interest?
No, I don't think so.
In defense of this allocation, I think that there are very few resources for children with these severe difficulties, and this program had the capacity to expand, and I think the Mental Health Division recognized the need and supported this allocation. It wasn't that off the wall.
Madam Chair, in actuality, this is a program that has been developed in Douglas County and expanded at the Douglas County extension, volunteerism, and so forth. The building has been built through the housing program. It's been funded at a real, I say, hard struggle in Douglas County now for several years. This isn't nearly enough to make the program go on its own, but it was a big help in the community.
Are there any further comments?
Yeah, were there no other counties that had either similar ability to expand?
Apparently, the co-chair stated, there was a bill for this, and I have some memos in my file here that talk about the urgent need because of a number of suicides in the area, and also from the Rosewood Public Schools, that because of the transient rate there in that particular area, that these youth feel disconnected and they need this.
That's a comment. Again, I think there's other counties that are equally deserving. There's other bills we've had out there, AAA's looking for stuff to try and make things balanced within all the different communities and counties for existing programs. I have a little trouble, I think, voting for this type of general fund allocation for just one small center, regardless of where it was in state, even in my district. So, I think
I'm sorry, I just can't let that go by.
The AAAs are not asking for $200,000. The AAAs are asking for $3.9 million. There's a big difference, Representative Schrader, about being able to supply the AAAs. Kind of $200,000 isn't going to go very far for a AAA either.
I may, Co-Chair. We have all the little programs the Bid Center wants to fund as separate individual items. I bet we could add up to well over $3.9 million and be able to take care of legitimate AAA needs or whoever else has a statewide priority.
Well, I just happen to be the chair.
Representative Schrader, we are concerned about the AAA, and there is a budget note in DHR's budget. But there are two concerns we have. One, we do believe that they do have some legitimacy to their concern about equitable payments. And we have directed the department to look at that in the interim. But there's a second concern with AAA's, and that is that their ability to be accountable when they grant eligibility to people for food that they have actually caused the state of Oregon to have been penalized by the federal government. The penalty doesn't go back out to the AAA and eat it internally. So the study in the interim will look at both things, making the AAA more accountable and look at the equity issue. And I think that's the proper thing to do rather than just come in and address part of the problem, because there are actually multiple problems with the AAA. So, Senator Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to say for the record, we're going to have programs that people are coming in and seeking funding. If we waited to fund everything on a statewide basis, nothing would ever get funded. It's our duty and responsibility as legislators is to fund innovative programs, to look for opportunities, and to look for areas that state dollars can be leveraged so that more state dollars don't have to be sent there in the future. Programs like the DART program, other economic development tools, and other things in areas across the state. We have opportunities at certain periods of time, and I think it's critical that we try and do those when we can. And it also can help create a model for statewide use. So if we waited, we'd get nothing done. So we can only do what we can with the limited amount of dollars that we have.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, the point I'd like to make in regards to this is an improvement on the system. Because what you've been looking at otherwise would have been a Christmas tree bill. And now what we're saying is that every legislator, when they have a priority for something, will have to put in a bill that goes through the subsidy committee. The way it's happened in the past, there's a bill at the end of the lottery funding bill or the emergency board, those type of things, where you have a list of each member and what he wanted in the process, which really is an equitable way of doing it. This way it has to go to a subsidy committee. Somebody has to look at it and have to allow it to happen. So, and I think the part people spending on the office right now, they still believe there will be a Christmas tree sale. Well, I don't think so.
I appreciate both of your explanations. That does make much more sense. I appreciate the way you're going also in terms of not having a Christmas tree bill. I am more interested in the total process like you're indicating. I just have a reservation on this particular issue for that one little tiny center. That's my concern.
Madam Chair, this study was done before we went into this. There's a need for 300 and some positions like this in this area that we're serving there with this particular unit. It was put into effect through donations and so forth, been run and operated, and we're asking for a little bit of help to continue this on. This also, I might say, takes me all dead that are disturbing of the school system. It's having a real problem. The school system still gets some of the money for these students, even though they're taken out of the school. And so they don't even give us the whole school day amount to apply to what we're doing there. And it's certainly not a small particular situation. That's a larger situation that needs some kind of help. We've operated that on our own for several years.
At high time, I didn't think it was going to put out 600.
No, he can't. Senator Trump.
What was the previous question?
Thank you, Senator Trump. Thank you. We do need to get the senators moving here. Are there any no votes on House Bill 3128? Representative Schrader, no. Any other no votes? Hearing, seeing none, House Bill 3128 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Please show Representative Ross is excused. And we will go to House Bill 3225 relating to the management of natural resources, Senator Barry Olin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. House Bill 3225 implements ballot measure 66 by creating the Parks and Natural Resources Fund to receive the constitutionally mandated 15% of net state lottery proceeds. For the 1999-01 biennium, 15% of the net lottery proceeds is projected to be $86.9 million. House Bill 3225 allocates 50% of the fund to the Parks sub-account, 50% of the fund to the Restoration and sub-account. The revenues in the Parks sub-account are constitutionally dedicated to the protection, repair, operations, creation, and development of state parks and recreation sites. House Bill 3225 directs the revenues in the Parks sub-account to the State Parks and Recreation Department for these purposes. Revenues in the restoration and protection sub-account are constitutionally dedicated to the restoration state of native salmonid populations, watershed, fish and wildlife habitats, and water quality. Household 3225 directs the revenues in the restoration and protection sub-account to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which is designated as the single entity to administer the program. OEB's budget and the allocation of its restoration and protection of water funds have been dealt with today in Senate Bill 5549, which we heard earlier. 55% of the funds for the restoration protection sub-account must be used for capital expenses, which are defined in House Bill 3325. In order to maintain this distinction, House Bill 3325 establishes a watershed improvement operating fund to receive 35% of the lottery funds. The existing watershed improvement grant receives 65% of the lottery funds for eligible projects. House Bill 3225 also directs all interest earnings on the funds established in the bill to be deposited into a restoration and protection research fund. Revenues accruing to this fund will be used to fund research and other monitoring, evaluation, and assessment activities related to the Oregon plan. House Bill 3225 was crafted during 17 hearings by the Joint Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery and 8 hearings by the Natural Resources Subcommittee of Ways and Means. Significant portions of the bill are required by Measure 66's amendments to the Oregon Constitution. Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 3225.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Are there any questions for Senator Ferrioli on House Bill 3225? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3225? Senator Metzger. Any other no votes?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger is the only no vote in all of our hearings on any of these bills except for one that was cast in the 1997 legislative session by Representative Bob Montgomery against the Oregon plan. So he joins a distinct and lonely group of people.
I must respond.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Co-Chair. The good senator knows how much I appreciate the hard work he did on 3225, but as consistent with the Parks budget, because of the backlog that we used with Measure 66, although I appreciate the difficulty under those constraints of which he had to work on the budget, I'm remaining consistent on my no vote in that regard.
Thank you, Senator.
I think I will join him with
another. All right, now we're back.
Starting an avalanche.
You didn't want him to be
alone. Okay. House Bill 3225, having received your required majority, passed.
Okay, I'm a no too.
Madam Co-Chair, I'll be a no if Senator Farrell would like to reconsider. No, I'm just kidding.
House Bill 3225, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Nesley will carry in the House. Senator Farrell will carry in the Senate. That brings us to House Bill 3456 relating to independent cleanup of environmental contaminants. Senator Farrell, you're up again.
Madam Co-Chair, the Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 3456.
Thank you, Senator
Farrell. Madam, this bill relates to the independent cleanup of environmental contamination. It requires the DEC to establish a process by which a person may conduct an independent action at a facility and apply to the department for a determination that no further remedial or removal action is necessary. The bill creates a 5-member independent action advisory panel within the Department of Environmental Quality, and the members of the advisory panel will be appointed by the governor, subject to confirmation by the Senate. The purpose of the advisory panel is to review determinations by the DEC regarding independent action cleanup. After review, the panel would give non-binding opinions to the DEC director for consideration before final decisions are made. The Natural Resources Subcommittee appropriated $322,645 from General Fund of DEQ to establish independent action process and provide support to the advisory committee. The Subcommittee also instructed DEQ to come to the emergency board for increasing other funds on location if the bill results in a substantial increase in the number of cleanup actions the department becomes involved with. The Subcommittee does recommend approval. Madam Co-Chair, this bill allows independent action and will stimulate a further and more efficient cleanup of types by independent actions by companies, by individuals, and others, whereupon these folks would apply to the Department of Environmental Quality for approval of their cleanup and release from further action. So it's a way to stimulate positive, proactive cleanup with, without all of the disincentives provided when folks call the Department of Environmental Quality, ask for cleanup action, and fall into the regulatory pit from which there's little or no escape. This bill is recommended for passage by the subcommittee as a proactive cleanup bill.
Thank you, Senator Bailey. Senator Trump.
Just a question. Was the agency okay with it?
The agency did come forth and talked about a different pathway to the same objective, but the pathway that the agency put forward created more of a regulatory mesh than the one that we were trying to solve. So let's keep in mind that this only applies to independent actions initiated by the owner or operator of a site. It's not ordered by the DEQ. It's done proactively. And then upon cleanup, that this individual or entity would go to the department and request that they review the cleanup activities and certify that it was done in a reasonable manner and that no further action is necessary. So my point is this is a proactive a situation. The advisory panel of independent citizens is the main feature that was created by this bill.
Did they come to like it or not?
I think they came to regard it as a way to stimulate independent cleanup.
Okay. Are there further questions? For the question, are there any no votes on the passage of House Bill 3456? Hearing and seeing none?
I'll be a no.
And so is a no. Are there any other no votes? House Bill 3456, having received the required majority, is passed to the floor with the House recommendation. And that brings us to our final bill, House Bill 3615, relating to public utility commissions. Representative
Thank you. This is one we've been looking for this afternoon. The public utility commission, the three members appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, the commission regulates customer rates and services of the Oregon industry on utilities, natural gas, and telephone utilities. Three members of the commission select one to serve as the chairperson. House Bill 3615, as they engrossed, would require the governor to appoint one of the commission members as the chairperson. The chairperson would be the administrative head of the agency required to hire, assign, and reassign and coordinate personnel of the commission. The bill also requires the governor to appoint an interim task force to study the structure of the public utility commission and determine whether changes to the structure of the commission are necessary or is like the task force to report its findings from the 71st Legislative Assembly or Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends passage of 3615.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Are there any questions for Representative Butler on House Bill 3615? Hearing and seeing none, are there any no votes on House Bill 3615?
I'm a courtesy yes vote. We have the right to vote with yes on the floor.
I'm a courtesy yes, too, and I need to study this issue.
So there are no votes. House Bill 3615.
I'm courteous. I'm sick of myself.
And I need to let everyone know, if you listen up for a moment, we will be having full committee tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. We'll also will try to run our subs at 3 if we get off the floor in time to do so. So anyway, thank you all for your hard work. We are here.